Are you ready for the quantum age?
Humanity's next step in evolution?
Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you to the extraordinary platform of evolutionary voices for the quantum age.
Let's explore. Learn more about this upcoming age where we bridge science with spirituality.
Where potentiality meets reality.
Where we take compassion into action.
Our trailblazers and visionaries will ask the whys, the what ifs, while igniting continuous possibility.
Come along with us into an age beyond what we know today, where we can grow together in unity consciousness.
Experience evolutionary voices for the quantum age Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on DreamVision7Radio.com. Welcome to What's in Your Way is the Way with your host, Mary O'Malley, inviting you to open to the radical notion that in your life, whatever you perceive to be in your way is the way. In other words, your challenges, whether they be relationships, compulsions, finances, or illness, come with gifts embedded in them that can bring healing and allow you to experience the joy of being fully alive. Mary is a counselor, awakening mentor, inspirational speaker, and the author of What's in the Way is the Way, The Gift of Our Compulsions, Belonging to Life, and The Magical Gift of Aliveness. What's in Your Way is the Way with Mary O'Malley is part of Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age. Heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
Welcome to What's in Your Way is the Way. I am your host, Mary O'Malley, and I would like to explore with you today a vision for the future in this time of such chaos. You watch the evening news and you think we're going to hell in a handbasket. We're getting ready to vote in the U.S. next week, and it's hard to watch television because of the political ads and the news and all the divisiveness and the against, you know, rather than for. There's one congresswoman in Washington State that all of her ads, none of them are against somebody else. They all are for what she is doing and what she wants to do in the future. So refreshing, but that's not what most of these ads are all about. And you watch the, you know, evening news, and there are active shooters. You know, a week ago today, the shooter came into the Temple of Life on the Sabbath and killed 11 people. My heart aches, you know, when I think about that. We think about all the school shootings that have happened and the shootings. Somebody went into a yoga studio and killed two people. What is happening? It seems like this is a true time of breaking down. We seem that we're farther apart, we're more polarized than we ever have been, although that's not true. Just think of the Civil War and you'll know what I mean. You know. But what is happening? I would like to offer you a view that this is a breakdown time, yes, in a way it is. It's a breakdown of the old kind of way human beings have been with one another. And it truly is a breakthrough time, a time where something new is being born, a time where we see that we're all in this together, on this tiny blue-green jewel of a planet that is floating in vast, vast oceans of space. So in my first book, Belonging to Life, I have one of my favorite chapters of all my books, and it's called The Fertility of the Dark. What a great title. And it is all about shifting our relationship to chaos, to the challenges in our lives, to the pains in our lives, from something that is bad and wrong and must be controlled, to something that is for us. So take a moment and look at nature. A wildfire, and we have so many wildfires now. For a long time, we didn't understand the importance of wildfires, that when a forest gets old, the wildfire goes in and cleans out all the underbrush, and it actually creates light to come in for seeds that have been lying dormant in the in the ground. They come forth. Or look at the tectonic plates, these plates that float around on the top of the earth that contain all of our continents. And when two plates come together, oh my God, there's such force. Of course, it happens in a very slow universal time. But out of this coming together of these two opposite forces come beautiful mountain ranges. And I can still remember the first time that I got a sense of this is when my main mentor, Stephen Levine, said, if you get really close to an ant war and you see the violence and you see the killing and the dismembering of all of these ants, you think, oh my God, this is absolutely horrible. But if you back up and if you begin to look at it from a bigger picture, you see that baby birds are being fed by the parts of the ants that had died. So in this chapter, The Fertility of the Dark, in my book, Belonging to Life, I put a quote. It's not actually a quote. It's my synopsis of a few pages of one of Trungpa Rinpoche's books. I believe it was The Myth of Freedom. Trungpa Rinpoche is Pema Chodron's teacher, or was Pema Chodron's teacher. And Pema Chodron is the wonderful Buddhist nun who, every time she writes a book, it goes immediately to the New York Times bestseller list, because she is really writing about this shift of perception that is happening in humanity. And the quote, or the synopsis of these few chapters that I wrote, is this: if there were no confusion, there would be no wisdom. Chaos is workable, not regressive. Respect whatever happens. Chaos should be regarded as extremely good news. So how can we possibly understand that chaos is good news? It is only from a bigger picture. It is only from understanding that we are a living process, that all of life is a living process. And it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. You know, every single breath has a beginning, a middle, and an end. Every single day, every single year, every single human being, even the earth. You know, the earth had an infancy. You know, and it was, you know, gas and dust and lava and so on and so forth. And then it matured into the place where we are now. But this is only one phase of its journey. You know, we are resting on all the creativity that has gone before us. And life will continue to change and evolve. And in 100, 200, 300 years, life will not look like it looks now, because everything is a living process. So you can see it the most in a human being. You had an infancy. At one time, you were less than 2 feet tall. And when you learned how to stand up, you couldn't even barely come to your parents' knees. And then you evolved and you went to school and you had a teenagehood, and you may still be in your teenagehood as you're listening to this, but most of us have moved into adulthood and some of us into mature years, the sunset years. But let that help you to begin to see that everything is a living process. So too is humanity. That humanity had an infancy. You know, we used to live in caves, and it was very hard to stay warm or stay cool in the heat or to get our food or to find mates. But then slowly we evolved. We were tribal, and we moved from place to place, and then eventually we began to settle down and cultivate fields, and slowly and surely we created cities. And we see all this as an unfolding movie. I don't know if you've ever seen those clips. You can find them at the library of a person when they were a child, and then when they were a little bit older, and then teenagehood, you know, and you begin to see that everything is a living process. So in our young time as a species, oh my God, what did we do politically? If we didn't like somebody, we would torture them. We would put them on the rack, or we would, tie them to a stake and create a fire at their feet. Once even heard that they would put people on a big wheel and then roll them down an incline. I mean, oh my God. We thought that was okay. To torture. If we didn't like somebody's political beliefs, we would just behead them or imprison them in dark, dark dungeons where they died a very slow death. Yes, there are still places of torture, in the world. Just think of they now know it was the Saudis that came to the Saudi embassy and killed the American citizen I can't remember his name right now, and then they cut up his body into parts and then buried it and then denied it. So, but I want you to get the sense that we're moving out of an old way slowly. I think it was Martin Luther King that said the moral arc is long. The moral arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice. It is slow. But it is important to notice that most of us, not all of us, don't behead people when we don't like their political beliefs. And let's look at religion. Oh, my God, for you know, in the beginning, you know, we thought that God was this angry man that we had to placate by killing some of our young people and offering them up to the gods so that or to the gods so that they would bring rain and sun for the crops and so on and so forth. And of course, you know, we don't do that anymore, but for most of the time religion has been around. It has been something that its main movement wasn't in, you know, becoming a better person. The main movement of the churches, the synagogues, the Buddhist temples was to control the masses. If you doubt that, think about when, I think it was in the Middle Ages, when the Bible was translated into, I think it was German that it was translated into in the beginning, and then eventually English. And oh my God, there was such an uproar, and they tried to murder the people that were doing this. The church did. Because of the addiction to power over. It got so crazy that you had to pay the priest to, you know, save your soul, and, you know, you had to go to the priest to find out, you know, what was in the Bible, you know, because you couldn't read it. But slowly and surely, we began to be able to find our own pathway to God. And yes, there are still, you know, a lot of movements in the world that basically say that I have the path for you, and if you just follow this, then everything will be okay, you know, and if you don't, then it won't be. And yet more and more people are discovering that their lives, and they can learn how to listen to their lives are the pathway to God. And so another bigger picture thing is that we used to believe that it was okay to own other human beings. And yes, there's still pockets of that in the world, but slowly, much more slowly than we want it to happen, we are beginning to move out of that and understanding that that is not that's not okay. That is not okay. And yet, you know, this country was almost torn apart when there became this uprising inside of human beings that basically said, we can't do this. We can't do this to our fellow human beings. And how many people fought long and hard to be able to still own other human beings. So, slowly and surely, that movement from the youth of our species into greater and greater maturity is happening. And one of the most powerful ways you can see it is in how people have been governed. For most of the time, human beings have been around. All human beings, except for a tiny slice in the very top, the people that had the power, most human beings had no say-so in how they were governed. They were governed by kings and dictators and despots and emperors. I just got done reading a book about the third emperor in the Tang Dynasty, you know, in China, and it was the time before this emperor came into power. Oh my God, I couldn't believe that the empress actually killed the child of the beloved mistress of the emperor and tortured her friends and so on and so forth. And finally, that woman was brought to justice, and the emperor and his beloved, she was made the empress, and very shortly he began to lose his mind. And this empress had the power, and it was one of the few times in Chinese history where there was ease, there were no wars, there was the wealth was distributed more evenly. And then, of course, emperors took back over again and then went back into this old kind of way that human beings have been with themselves down through the eons, against and power grabbing and trying to make the other person wrong or murder them or kill them. So we're living in that kind of time. You can see it on the evening news. It's nowhere near as strong or bad as it used to be. But what would happen if this was a breakthrough time? What would happen if more and more human beings are beginning to see other human beings not as an object in their mind, but the subject of their hearts? What do I mean by that? Well, you know, if an alien came down, let's say a couple of aliens came down, and they were flying over our planet, and then they settled down maybe on a high mountaintop and began to watch how human beings are with another, with one another. I mean, I don't know whether they would just endlessly cry or laugh hysterically. They would see that we value a fellow human being by the color of their skin. I mean, really, a person has greater or lesser value with probably a greater percentage of the people on this planet still, just by the color of their skin. Or their value is through their gender, and for most of the time, and I'm not knocking men, you know, they've all had an important role to play in this unfolding of life, but for most of the time, women have been less than. That's why it's so exciting that so many women are running for office, you know, in this year's elections, and so exciting that the Saudi Arabia women finally have the right to drive. To drive. But of course, there's many, many countries where women still have absolutely no power, and these aliens would just be stunned by that. That's half, that's actually more than half of humanity. And it's the half that gives birth, the half that is cracked open by birth, not every woman, but there's something that the feminine carries that the masculine needs in order to live in balance, and that hasn't been there, that women have been seen as less than. But we also see people as less than if they're disabled, and that is just, God, it just makes my heart ache. Have you ever been around a Down syndrome person? Oh, my God. Most of them bring you home to your heart. Have you ever been around somebody that has Asperger's syndrome? And they may not have the social skills that most of us have, but oh my God, so many of them have such skills. I can't remember whether it's Microsoft or Google. They have this whole section now where they hire developmentally disabled people, and they are accessing this great intelligence that so many people with mental challenges have. We also make people less than for their sexual orientation. And everything in life is on a bell curve. And yes, most of the people are, you know, heterosexual. But on either side of the bell curve, you know, they even find it in the animal kingdom, you know, homosexuality. You know, I don't think they find, you know, cross-dressing, but the point I'm trying to make here is that this time of chaos, rather than a breakdown time, for me is a breakthrough time, that we're beginning to see one another through the eyes of our aware heart rather than our divisive, judgmental mind. We've had enough of that. Just look at history and you will see what that has brought forth. Now, you know, is this spreading like wildfire all over the face of the planet? No. But is this slow, steady movement? Just like a child learning how to walk, the child had to, you know, hold on to the couch and take a couple of steps and then it falls down because its legs, muscles aren't strong enough to hold it. And then slowly and surely it holds on to somebody's hand and it can take more steps. And then it tries to take the steps all by itself. And of course it falls down, but it gets back up again. And that is what is happening. And if you doubt that, look and see what happens in the natural disasters. You know, they say in Pittsburgh that the outpouring of love after the active shooter went into the Tree of Life Synagogue a week ago is just amazing. And they showed a sign on the evening news last night, and I wish I could remember exactly what it was, but this was on a church. It was something along the line, to love your neighbor all the time. That is what is being born inside of us. We're beginning to realize, as I said earlier, that we're all in this together. On this tiny, tiny, itty-bitty planet that is dancing around a very mediocre star that is on one arm of a spiral galaxy that is one of countless, countless galaxies. And it's time for us to mature. It's time for us to see that every single human being matters. Every single human being is a thread in the tapestry of life. Every single human being has been brought forth out of mystery because life needed to express itself in that way. Can you begin to see that even if somebody has diametrically opposed views to you, even if somebody's sexual orientation is something that your religion says is bad or wrong, you know, even if somebody is who you have formerly deemed less than, in this moment, I want you to let in, deeply inside of you, this human being is a necessary and perfect expression of life. So, here we are. I would say that humanity is in its teenagehood. We're not in our infancy anymore. We're not young children. But we're in teenagehood where we have passionate, passionate beliefs. And, of course, our beliefs are the best or the rightest. But most of us don't have that tempered with the wisdom of a mature mind. So, how can you become a part of this radical revolution that's happening on our planet? The revolution from seeing life through the lens of them and us. That the usness, we are the right, and the them, they are the wrong. We are the better, they are the less than. And as we explored, that happens in politics, that happens in gender politics, it happens in seeing disabled people, you know, it happens in seeing other people's religions. But there is no them in us. And more of us are ready to see people not as objects in our mind, as the other, as less than, into the subject of their heart. What do I mean by that? Well, there is a wonderful story in Jack Kornfield's book. I think it's called Stories of the Spirit, Stories of the Heart, and this is the story, and Jack Kornfield is an amazingly wonderful, probably the premier meditation teacher, you know, in the U.S., and of course he travels all over the world and has written many, many books, and this story is the story of a young man called Terry Dobson, and he was a man that was studying Aikido in Japan, and he was putting in 8 hours of rigorous training nearly every day for years and years, and he was tough. He especially liked to throw and grapple with people, but his martial arts skills were untested in combat, and his teacher would say over and over again, Aikido is the art of reconciliation. Whoever has the mind to fight has broken his connection with the universe. Just let that in for a moment. To me, that is the shift that is happening. Rather than fighting and reacting to other people and to the unfolding of what's going on in our planet, we can learn how to respond. His teacher goes on to say, if you try to dominate people, you are already defeated. We study how to resolve conflict, not how to start it. So even though Terry understood this intellectually in his heart, he wanted absolutely a legitimate opportunity whereby he might save the innocent by destroying the guilty. One day he found himself on a lumbering train moving through the suburbs of Tokyo. The car he was in was relatively empty and quiet, when all of a sudden, as the doors opened at the next station, the quiet was shattered by a man bellowing violent and incomprehensible curses. He staggered into the car, drunk and dirty. Screaming, he swung at a woman holding a baby. The blow set her spinning into the laps of an elderly couple. Terrified, the couple jumped up and scrambled towards the other end of the car. The laborer aimed a kick at the retreating back of the old woman, but missed as she scuttled to safety. The train lurched ahead, the passengers frozen with fear. Terry then goes on to describe what happened next. I stood up and said to myself, "This is it! People are in danger, and if I don't do something fast, they will probably get hurt." Seeing me stand up, the drunk recognized a chance to focus his rage. "Aha!" he roared. "A foreigner, you need a lesson in Japanese manners." I looked at him with disgust and dismissal. "I plan to take this turkey apart, but he had to make the first move." I wanted him mad, so I pursed my lips and blew him an insolent kiss. He gathered himself for a rush at me. A split second before he could move, someone shouted, "Hey!" It was startling. I remember the strangely joyous lilting quality of it, as though you and a friend had just been searching diligently for something, and he suddenly stumbled upon it. "Hey!" I wheeled to my left. The drunk spun to his right, and we both stared down at a little old Japanese man. He must have been well into his 70s, this tiny gentleman, sitting there in his immaculate kimono. He took no notice of me, but beamed delightfully at the laborer, as though he had a most important and most welcome secret to share. "Come here and talk with me." He waved his hand lightly. The big man followed as if on a string. He planted his feet belligerently in front of the old man and roared, "Why in the hell should I talk to you?" The drunk now had his back to me. If his elbow moved so much as a millimeter, I'd drop him in his socks. The old man continued to beam at the laborer. "What you been drinking?" he asked, his eyes sparkling with interest. The drunk barked back, "I've been drinking sake, and it's none of your business." "Oh, that's wonderful," the old man said. "Absolutely wonderful. You see, I love sake, too. Every night, me and my wife," she's 76, you know, "we warm up a little bottle of sake and take it out into the garden, and we sit on an old wooden bench. We watch the sun go down, and we look to see how our persimmon tree is doing. Oh, we worry about whether it will recover from those ice storms we had last winter." He looked up at the laborer, eyes twinkling. As he struggled to follow the old man's conversation, the drunk's face began to soften. His fist slowly unclenched. "Yeah," he said, "I love persimmons too," as his voice trailed off. "Yes," said the old man, smiling, "and I'm sure you have a wonderful wife." "No," replied the laborer, "my wife died." Very gently, swaying with the motion of the train, the big man began to sob, "I don't got no wife. I don't got no home. I don't got no job. Oh, I'm so ashamed of myself." Tears rolled down his cheeks. A spasm of despair rippled through his body. The train arrived at my stop, and as the doors opened, I heard the old man cluck sympathetically. "My, my," he said, "that is a difficult predicament. Sit down and tell me about it." I turned my head for one last look. The laborer was sprawled on the seat, his head in the old man's lap, and the old man was softly stroking the filthy, matted hair. As the train pulled away, I sat down on a bench. What I had wanted to do with muscle had been accomplished with kind words. I had just seen Aikido in combat, and the essence of it was love. Oh, thank you, Jack Kornfield and Terry Dobson, because that captures this place that life is moving us into, this place beyond the them and us, beyond the attack and defend, beyond the victor and victim that we have lived most of the time that humanity has been around. Will this shift happen quickly? Probably not. Will this come to fruition before we completely desecrate the earth and maybe even annihilate ourselves? I don't know, but I do know that how you respond to this time of chaos matters, for you are the place that the healing is happening. You are the place where you learn how to be some form of the little Japanese man in his kimono and discover how to meet the people in your life that are difficult, that are abrasive, that are against rather than for. Now, you may not have a person, you know, physically in your life that is like that, or you may. It may be your mate, you know, or it may be your mother-in-law, or it may be your boss. But you can live your life trying to dominate them or becoming the victim to them, or you begin to know that life has brought this into your life so that you could make this major shift of perception. You know, many years ago, I watched, and still love as one of my all-time favorite movies, Mind Walk, and it is the story of a politician, a poet, and a scientist end up on the island of Mont-Saint-Michel, you know, in France. And the whole movie is them, you know, talking and moving around, you know, this island. And it was all about this shift of perception that we're talking about here, that looking at what is happening with humanity from a bigger picture and looking at it with the understanding that you can make a difference in this shift. And at one point, the physicist and the politician are on a ledge, you know, a walkway that is looking out at the sea. And the physicist said to the politician, talking about this shift of, "Oh my God," you know, the politician says, "We're going to hell in a handbasket," and the physicist said, "We are destroying rainforests at the rate of one football field per second. Brazil is doing this in order to pay their national debt through money raised from cattle ranches and land speculations. The barren forests are one of the main causes of global warming. We create cattle ranches in order to produce more red meat, which is one of the direct causes of heart attacks and a high medical cost. These are examples of interconnectedness. You cannot look at a single one of our global problems in isolation, trying to understand and solve it. You can fix a fragment of a piece, but it will deteriorate a second later because what it was connected to has been ignored. We have to change everything at the same time. The politician then says, well, suppose you are right and everything is interconnected to everything else. Where do you start? By the way you are seeing the world, the physicist responds. You are still searching for the right piece to fix first. All the problems are fragments of one single crisis, a crisis of perception. And so this is why I wanted to share this with you today, because we are, you know, we come back to Rinpoche's quote, you know, chaos should be regarded as extremely good news. I mean, you know, you want to laugh or cry when you hear that. But he is basically saying the same thing that the physicist was saying, that all of this breakdown that's happening in this planet is waking up more and more people to the interconnectedness of everything, to the fact that everybody matters, to the fact that people and the earth and all beings on this planet deserve to be the subjects of our hearts rather than a them and us object in our mind. So how does this shift come about? It comes about in your daily life. Jack Kornfield, one of my favorite quotes from him is to open to life, and that's what we're talking about. It's, you know, the disconnected mind, the them and us kind of mind, the power over kind of mind is not open to life. It is the aware heart that is open. And Jack says to open requires a deep and heartfelt compassion for all that is around us and within us. And the place where we can most directly open to the wonderful mystery of life is in what we don't do well. In the places of our struggles and our vulnerabilities. So, Jack is basically saying, and I am saying it too, that as you heal the war inside of you, this war that you can see in history, that kind of mind is still inside of you. As you begin to heal that war, you begin to open your heart. And the better way to say that is your heart begins to open. You can't open your heart. But the armoring around your heart begins to dissolve. And even a better way to say it is you can't even open your heart. Your heart is always open. But the armoring around your heart that comes from this old kind of mind, this mind that believes it's separate and must dominate, whether it's a fellow human being or something inside of you, that old kind of mind, when you begin to be with it, the armoring around your heart begins to dissolve, and you begin to have deep, deep, abiding compassion for every single part of you, because you've been on a long, long journey away from your heart, and there's so many parts of you, like your fear and your despair. despair and your longing and your aloneness and your anger and your irritation and your shame and your grief, all of these begin to come home to your heart. And then there is absolutely no way that you cannot respond to a fellow human being from your aware heart. You maybe don't have to have them come and move in with you. I think Stephen would say, you don't have to let them back into your life, but don't put them out of your heart. So the them I'm talking about is all the people that drive you crazy. People that have political ads that are touting absolutely insane ideas and tearing their, you know, person that they are running against, tearing them apart. Or people in higher office that make bald-faced lies and put blame, you know, where they cannot acknowledge a truth inside of them, so they blame other people. These are the people, whether you hear about them on the news or you actually live with them. These are the people that will show you this old kind of mind as it lives inside of you. This old kind of mind that is beginning to lose its power over us. This old kind of mind that if we continue on with it, we will annihilate ourselves. So I want to end with a poem that my mother sent to me. This was when I was 23 or 24. And this was when I was now, I had been descending into darkness, but this is when I really, truly was lost in darkness. And this poem was just this tiny, itty-bitty light. And then it became more. It became a flashlight, and then it became a floodlight, because it has guided me down this pathway out of separation, out of darkness, out of disconnection, into an alive and intimate and love-filled connection with myself and with life. And this really sums up what we have been talking about here today. And it's by a woman called Martha Smock, and it's called No Other Way. And I may get a few of the words wrong, because it's so deep inside of me that I may have changed a few words over the years, but the essence is there. If we could but see the pattern of our days, we could discern how crazy were the ways by which we came to this present time, this place in life. And we could see the climb our soul has made up through the years, and we could forget the hurts, the wanderings, the fears, and even the wastelands of our lives, and know we could come no other way or grow into our good without those steps that our feet found hard to take and our faith found hard to meet. The road of life winds on, and we as travelers go from turn to turn until we come to know the truth that life is endless and that we are forever inhabitants of all eternity. So I'm inviting you to see that what is unfolding for humanity, there's no other way. We're tectonic plates that are mashing together, and out of it will create beautiful mountains with views where we can see forever. And wherever you are in that process of maturing, know that whatever has happened in your life, I would not want to live the first 30 years of my life over again. But I am now grateful for them because they crack me open. They set me on this path out of continuous struggle and back into connection with life right here and right now. So what I'm saying is that you can trust your process. You don't have to like it, but you can trust it. And the more you soften your belly, allow your natural breath, let your mind be curious about what is right now, and open your heart, our world will be healed.
Thank you for listening to this edition of What's in Your Way is the Way with your host, Mary O'Malley. You can access Mary's offerings on her websites, maryomalley.com and whatsintheway.com. Join Mary next time to experience the peace and joy that is always with you on Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age. Heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.